Okay, roll call.
Roll call, please.
Roll call, please. Oh, do I say your name? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Mark Solomon.
Present.
Okay. Mike Borstein.
Present.
Okay. Doug Kelly.
I'm here.
Okay. Dan Hilmer. Not here. Mary Beth Bushy.
Here.
Okay. And Eli Beckman.
Here.
Okay.
And do we have the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
Yeah. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we're going to now have open period for public participation, open time for public expression, up to 2 minutes per speaker on items within CMSA's jurisdiction and not on the board commissioner's agenda. The board will not discuss or take any action during open time, but board members may briefly respond to statements made or questions proposed by the public, ask for clarification from staff, refer the matter to staff, or request staff to report back to the body at a subsequent meeting concerning any matter, or take action to direct staff to place a matter of business on a future agenda. Is there any member of the public that has anything they'd like to add? Seeing none, let's move to the consent calendar. Matters listed under this item are considered routine and will be enacted by one motion. The consent calendar may include resolutions, therefore the motion, second, and vote will also be applicable to the resolution and recorded accordingly. There will be no separate discussion of these items unless requested by a member of the board or the public prior to the time the board votes on the motion to adopt. And before we do a motion on that, Jason asked that we pull item I off of there and defer that to a later board meeting.
Going to defer the deferred compensation discussion?
Yes, we'd like to defer the deferred.
Yeah, I was talking with Commissioner Solomon and Chair DiGiovanni about this item, about the agenda on Friday, and we had a detailed discussion on this item. We thought it'd be better, more appropriate to bring the item to the Finance Committee, talk about it. They may have some detailed questions, respond to those. Then we have a committee recommendation, hopefully for the December 10th board meeting.
Sounds good. With the exception of item 4I, I move the consent calendar.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Unanimous. Okay.
Right. Motion carries.
Motion carries.
Yeah, there we go.
And then item five, let's go over to item five here. Accept the agency's fiscal year 19 audited financial statements and provide comments or direction to the general manager as appropriate. Jason.
Thank you, Chair. Vice Chair Borstein. So the attached to the staff report are the agency's audited financial statements for the fiscal year ending June 30, 2019. And also attached is the PowerPoint presentation that you're going to see tonight. So the agency audit went very well. So the auditor was on site for a couple days during July for our internal control audit, which went great. And then they came back in September for a few days for our financial audits. And not to spoil the presentation, but the audit went smooth, no disagreements with management, no issues or findings to report to management or the board, and it was a clean opinion. So we're really excited about that. So I just want to recognize the fine work from Ken, who's our acting board secretary tonight, and Ken's finance staff for a fine job during the year and also working well with the auditors. So with that, I'd like to present John Cropper with proper accountancy to give the presentation and answer any questions you have on the fiscal year 19 audit.
I'm going to leave a couple cards here if you care to call or email me. They're there. I am here primarily to answer questions. And as General Manager Dow said, the audit went really well this year. Heidi and Ken were, you know, extremely accommodating and always turning things around quickly. And I kind of mentioned that because, you know, when we report to boards, it's kind of we're really reporting usually critical things, you know, critical comments. The best thing we can say is, unmodified opinion, which is what you hire me to do, give our opinion on the financial statements. And so page one of your financial statements does have our opinion on there. And if you read through it about halfway down the first page, or actually all the way down on the first page, you'll see opinion there. It doesn't actually say unmodified, but it's basically a clean opinion. So that's what you want. My purpose here tonight is, you know, we do not have a management letter this year. It wasn't required based on the cleanliness of the audit. One of the things that I do want to, it's a very subtle thing, correct, is we did not audit your internal controls. We do come out at interim, and we do look at your internal controls, but the purpose of our internal controls, looking at the test and the testing of the internal controls, is to help us on our audit for final. So a little self-serving there, but I just wanted to, you know, give you a little bit of an understanding of what we're trying to do at interim and then at final. And I don't know if you want to crank your heads around, but you can see that we've got a couple PowerPoint slides. That one is not going to help you too much. This one has been said a couple times. It's the most important thing, so it really does need to be there. On page one of your financial statements, financial statements being broken up into four parts. First part being the audit opinion. The second part being the management discussion and analysis, which management and Ken and his team put together. It's really helpful if you're not a quantitative person to look at the very beginning and read over the management discussion and analysis, because it compares 2 years. Some of this, the two slides that I'm going to put up there pretty much are coming from the MD&A, the management discussion and analysis. And then we have the financial statements, and then we have the notes of the financial statements. So the second bullet up here, there's an audit standard. We call it 114. It's titled Communication with Those Charged with Governance. The AICPA is really, really wanting us as auditors to talk to boards and to assess risk. What do you think is important? What's going on? They want us to do it more at the beginning than we tend to do. We do kind of come in at interim and sniff around, and we're looking and how's things going, talking to management. Some of you may have gotten a fraud questionnaire from us. We're just kind of trying to understand the environmental controls and how things are. So that's kind of going on at interim as well, in addition to confirmations and things like that. But we want to talk to you as a board, and this letter that you have probably in your packet tonight, I'll go back and talk to you a little bit about some of these things. The indented things, I try and, it's pretty much a template, this letter, this 114 letter. But when I indent it, it's kind of me saying, pay attention to this sensitive note, or pay attention to this sensitive estimate, or something like that. So I'll come back to that. Here, like I said, this is showing you year to year. You can kind of understand what's going on. If I had to pick out one number, this number right here, you know, if somebody comes up to you as a member of the public and says, how much money do you have? You know, and after, you know, you're probably going to look to the cash, right? But really, if all the receivables come in and all the payables are paid, this is kind of the number you're left with. So if I were to say, what's the number in your checkbook, I'd kind of say, this is the number. Not the change. That's a year-to-year thing, but the net position, this is kind of...
I was wondering, I was like,
only 1 million.
I can talk to you.
That's right, yeah. But the net position is an important number for you to be aware of. Both Ken and Jason asked me to spend a little bit of time explaining what these deferred things are.
Yeah, that's my question. Is that pensions?
Largely, yes. But it's not just... So in the pension number will be in here, the non-current liability. And you can see that in the notes.
So that went down.
It went up a little bit, right? From here to there. Oh, you're right. You did go down. You got a guy who doesn't know what he's talking about. Yeah, this did go almost $3 million down. But that's not necessarily the pension number. If you want, we can do that. Let's go to a note here in your financials.
If you want to finish your presentation.
What's that?
If you want to finish your presentation.
Yeah, why don't we do that? Then I'll take you into the notes. I love it that you guys are asking questions, but when your eyes glaze over, I'm going to step back. Okay, so what is this deferred outflow and this deferred inflow stuff? And it largely, they came out with a GASB, a Governmental Accounting Standards Board, thing that said, you know what, we know things are going to happen with the valuations that we're giving, and these valuations are not going to be current. And so we need a way of tracking that asset, but we can't call it an asset because it's really not an asset. So I call deferred outflows an asset. What is deferred outflows? Again, I'll take you to the notes and I'll show you all the little stuff, but effectively, you're running a year behind the 2019, the June 30, 2019 date that I'm presenting to you tonight, your financial statements. That deferred outflows is essentially June 30, 2018. So any number of money that went out of your bank by Ken and the agency to pay for pensions for next year is not included in your valuation. So what do? The money's not there. It's gone. And you're not getting credit in the valuation. So there's a timing problem. And the timing problem, they set it up there and they call it deferred outflows. And I can show you that number, but it's essentially kind of an asset. It's kind of like a prepay. Now, there's other things going on, and I think it's best if I just show you where it is in the notes and you on the deferred out inflows, and you can see some of the things that are going on. When the actuary changes assumptions, when there's just a myriad of about 10 items that could be going on that affect that. And the deferred inflows went down, so the liability went down, 266 this year. The deferred outflows, it went down as well. So, you know, if you're tracking assets, that's kind of not that great a thing, but it does affect your net position. So, you have questions now? I promise I'll go to the notes. And that'll clarify some of the stuff that I'm thinking. But it seems like we're okay at this point. Okay.
Well, I have some sort of big picture questions.
Yes, please.
And if this is a good time to answer them, that's great.
Yeah.
Or if there's a better time, feel free to do it then.
Okay.
I'm very interested in the trajectory of the net position. It seems to me that it's, you know, almost triple of a year's total expenses, which seems high.
Okay.
So help me understand what that means and what your professional opinion is.
This is a really great question. And a lot of times members of boards go, wait a minute, we're charging fees to the public and we don't want to overcharge or we don't want to undercharge. But there's stuff that's happening out there. Like a couple years ago, we hadn't provided for pensions. We hadn't provided for OPEB. The next thing that the GASB may come out, and I sat with a GASB committee member at a lunch last September or June, and I said, so what are you guys going to come up with next? What about deferred maintenance?
Deferred maintenance, I've heard that.
So, you know, we have not set aside money for deferred maintenance. So do you want to take a chance that, you know, that you're going to have to float debt? Probably not. You're going to want to provide for that, much like a couple years ago, you hadn't provided millions of dollars for your pension or your OPEB. So who knows what's around the corner? If you were a bond guy or a debt guy, and I'm not, so I don't profess to play that tonight. I'm just an accountant. I look at stuff after the fact. You might look at the expenses, and it sounds like you've gone to expenses and said, hey, we're three times our annual, about 16, something like that.
Why do we need 3 years of expenses in the bank?
I don't know, deferred maintenance, whatever.
Is that, in your professional experience, is that usual?
That is strong. So I look at it like, are you strong or are you weak?
Well, we don't have $43 million in the bank.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a combination of
assets.
All the assets of the agency, buildings, structures, equipment, minus your depreciation, minus liabilities like our revenue bond debts, just subtracted from your assets. So there's all these pieces, but it's mainly the value of CMSA, the land, the outfall structure, the buildings, the equipment. All your total assets minus your liabilities is your position.
So it would be
a different front.
It would be helpful for you.
Yeah, go to SR San reports it.
Go to page 5.
Unrestricted. It's like unrestricted capital. Oh wait, the net position is unrestricted capital and
some of it's not spendable. So go to page 5. Page 5, and that's, you know, your management is very good. They picked up on that. If you see the $43 million, the 43.6, mm-hmm. on page 5, you'll see net position, you'll see net investment in capital assets. Effectively, out of that number, 36,596 and change is non-spendable because it's investments in your plan.
So our actual money in the bank is $7 million.
That's unrestricted. Your cash in bank is on the top under current assets.
It's like it's, 19 million.
Yeah, it's closer to the 19 million number.
And it's gone up by a million. So it's gone up by 10% in the last year. What's the trajectory? I mean, we can't keep going up 10% every year.
Well, I'm not saying it's all cash either. Okay, this is current assets. So if you go to the financial statement, which is probably where we need to be.
Page 12.
Page 12. Yeah, please do. Yeah.
This last year, 2019, was actually a really good year financially. We had three big things that contributed to that $1.4 million increase in that position. There was a, but I hate getting into accounting lingo, but there was a large, very large non-cash accrual, you know, for pension-related accrual. That was over $1 million for 2 years in a row. And then this FY19 year, it dropped by $750,000. It's just an actuarial calculation. It's non-cash. And so that reduced expense by $750,000. That's one. And another one is interest income. Because interest rates are going up. It started to tail off. Yeah. And then the third one is that we had lots of disappointments. The third one is there's FEMA and SURF monies that we received around $400,000, and that's part of this other non-operating revenues. And then we had a banner year in capacity charges, I assume because it's the hospital, but you know, Jason might know more about it than I do, but we had $671,000. Actually, 672,000.
Almost 672.
Yeah,
671,795.
So this capacity was charges.
Unusual year.
This is, yes, bad year.
On top of that, didn't you have less salaries also?
That's just due to vacant positions
and
turnovers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I go back to your core question. I think if you compared the unrestricted $7 million that is not really broken out there, and compare it to your expenses, that ratio is it's healthy. But it's not crazy. So if I were a bond guy and I was, you know, you were going out for debt, mm-hmm. I'd go, about a third of whatever your expenses are the next year is kind of a strong number. You want to be around there. If you're the city of Lafayette, city of Orinda, you'd find that you're higher than that. Their boards are probably, their councils are probably trying to get them to be somewhere about 1-to-1. You know, take care of a whole year's worth of expenses. But that's a strong city. I'm just giving you a comparison. So the state just came out with a listing of the strongest and weakest cities for, you know, red and yellow and green indicators. And the city of Lafayette happened to be
that.
Okay. The city of Lafayette happened to be, and we used to audit that a couple years ago, so I was very interested to see they were 469 out of 471. So they don't have PERS, right? They don't have pension issues. Mm-hmm. Either does Orinda. So there's an indicator as well. So anyhow, I guess I'm getting a little off topic, but my point is the whole pension thing, was very unknown, and it's still not really leveled out. And of the numbers up here, you've got deferred outflows, deferred inflows, and non-current liabilities that you need to consider on that. I did not think we would be getting into pensions, but it always is the big elephant in the room, you know?
Well, now is probably not the time to break open the pension discussion, but
yeah.
Obviously, when you say pensions, nobody knew about pensions. Everybody knew about pensions the last 20 years. So
yeah.
We all knew about pensions, and we knew about unfunded liabilities and unfunded OPEB liabilities.
Yes, that's a good point.
What facility currently are you reviewing for our actuary numbers on our unfunded pension liabilities and our unfunded OPEB liabilities?
Are you, say that again.
What software, where are you getting these numbers for?
Okay, so what happens is liabilities? Bartel and Associates, who you hire, mm-hmm. And this is kind of interesting, 15 mm-hmm. pages of your financial statements.
We use North Bay Pension.
Okay, you use North Bay Pension. Yeah. Okay, a lot of people use
Bartel.
Yeah. So, forgive me for that. But you give information to the actuaries, and they produce a report. We take that report, and we just use their numbers. So effectively, these are not our numbers, and they're not necessarily accurate. You have experts that are coming up with it. You can look in the notes, and I can show you the actuarial assumptions.
Where are they?
This seems like a good time. Let's go to page 28 or thereabouts. Actually not. A little further. Page 30. And this is a footnote. I kind of want to show you two things on page 31. First off, you see it two-thirds of the way down. You've got deferred outflows and deferred inflows. Deferred inflows totaling 1.7 and deferred outflows totaling 4 million. This is...
What page are you on?
I'm on 31. Page 31.
31, bottom of the page.
These aren't the totals that you'll find up there because you'd have to add the OPEB and what have you to get the actual total. But for your pension, you can see that you've got big numbers, and I mentioned change in assumptions. You've also got differences between expected and actual expenses. These are all calculated by the actuary, okay? And they use the assumptions that are on the next page, page 32. You can see the valuation date that was rolled forward is 2017. The measurement date is 2018. The discount rate is 7.15. And the inflation rate, and there are other things too, but these are the main things here, inflation to 2.5. One of the things that I think is kind of interesting on page 33 is if you look at the current discount rate of 7.15 and that $11 million liability, okay, compare that to what's above and the actual return that you're getting. What do you guys see what the real return 1 to 10 years? What's the largest one? Private equity? You see that mm-hmm. 6.3? Is that 7.15? No. So the question is, are the returns on the money that you get going to be over time 7.15? That's the big question. And if it's not, that number is understated. Yeah. I don't make these rules up, but this is a very good question that's coming over here. It's like, isn't this too much money? And I think we've kind of debunked that with, you know, we got to take the 43 and take the unspendable out, and you've got 7 million there. But now you got 7 million for possibly deferred maintenance and possibly the pension as well. And we haven't even talked about the OPEB.
Well, again, we spoke about this in the past. At Ross Valley, we're using GovInvest to more accurately track our OPEB and pension liability.
Okay.
And I think we have a good handle on it. We've got a plan. I think at some point, not tonight, we need to, I'd like to have a really full meeting on our OPEB and pension liability. I think that the public is entitled to that from every agency every year, and I think we really need to have a huge opening about that. We did that as part of our rate increase so that we could roll our plan. We have a 6-year plan for OPEB and a 12-year plan for pension as part of our 5-year rate increase. That was what we did.
Yeah, but we're planning to have a presentation next month on pension OPEB as it relates to that pension report that was produced by Larry Chu and the other Mill Valley Council member, where they have some various metrics in there. So Chair Giovanni asked us to have that on the agenda and use some of our numbers and their metrics and give a report to the board. But a couple of things on pension. So our Board of Finance Committee specifically decided not to include any money in our five-year revenue plan to pre-fund any of our pension liabilities. They said if we're going to increase our rates, we're going to increase those for operating costs, for future capital expenditures, and we're not going to include any money for pre-funding pensions. So that was a decision made by the Finance Committee, brought back to the board, and incorporated into the budgets. Mm-hmm. And what we did also do this last year is, you know, for 9 years, we've been pre-funding our OPEB in a CalPERS trust. Mm-hmm. And we brought to the board a OPEB financing plan that was approved by the board. Now that's incorporated into our budget. And what that shows is how much money we have in the trust fund. It shows what we're going to contribute over the next 5 years, which is the GASB 75 actuarial determined contribution amount. And in the model that we showed the board, change each year based on, you know, actual rates of returns and actual cost of medical. And we're going to update those numbers. But in the current plan, it shows it's like within 5 or 6 years, at that investment amount, we're going to have enough money in the trust fund to we can start paying the annual OPEB expenses for the retirees.
On a PAYGO.
On a PAYGO basis, using the trust fund money.
That's great.
So that's what's in the OPEB plan
that's
now.
OPEB. That's not a pension, though.
Yeah, that's not pension.
Yeah. So that's good, but I think what my point is, and I don't want to sidelight that discussion we're having, but I think we should have an annual report out that is very detailed about our pension and OPEB liability with real actuary numbers redone, and, you know, keep an eye on it, because the problem is with these GASB regulations changing, you know, they change every now they have, you know, three, four years, and then we just get walloped, and it's, I think we have to keep a much closer eye on this, and I think also the public's aware of it, and I think by really at least once a year having a, not just I understand what we're doing next month, but that's not what I'm talking about, real actuary numbers, and I still think that you might want to look at purchasing GovInvest as well for this agency, because I think it's a great program, it's a great accounting package for that. I think we get better report to our constituents where we are.
Let's get back to that.
Yeah. Real quickly, I have seen agencies, cities, housing authorities, I mean, everybody's in the same predicament, and I'd say you're in a strong position, but you can bring your actuary in, and he can do some of these graphs and show you and show you some pretty good information. I think this is a good time for me to say, now you know why we write this letter to you, and I'm going to transition to that letter, and you can see the indents, because the indents, the ones with the little where we have talked about estimates, most sensitive estimate on the letter that we wrote to the board. The first one is management estimate of pension related deferred.
What page are you on?
I'm on one of three of the letter. So if you find that, the first, there's two indented lines at the bottom of the page. And one starts management's estimate, and the other one starts management's estimate. One starts management estimate of the pension related deferred inflows, deferred outflows, and net pension liability and pension expense. That's the GASB 68. But GASB 68 was actually five GASBs, one of them having to do with GASB that created this deferred inflows and outflows.
But wait a minute, the letter.
Yes. Page 43.
It's not in the financial statements. I'm sorry, you guys.
Oh, okay.
I'm in a letter that we wrote to the board, but I don't have it.
But we're the board, and
you don't have the letter.
No. Shouldn't we have received the letter to the board?
It was just included at the back of the financial statements.
It's page 43.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. You just have to find it.
Page 43.
Yeah. Okay. 43.
Thank you.
This one right here?
Yeah.
That's an opinion. That's not it. That's not what.
There are multiple documents in here that appear to be like this.
Let me find it.
Sure.
Thank you. Is this where it starts? That's like the end of the. So this is the beginning.
Probably is on the front end.
That's just the, yeah, so this is the staff report, and then this is the actual.
Sure.
Yes,
yeah. Okay,
it's in
there.
Because I would say letter.
No, this letter, John, is not in the finished.
Okay. Well, let me give you a summary, and then we'll make sure you get the letter. So the letter, I think you got it somewhere, but okay. We'll just say the most sensitive estimates revolve around the pension, and they revolve around OPEB, and they revolve around depreciation. So we highlight those in our letter to you. That makes sense, right? I mean, all the big items. One other thing that we threw in there this year was inventory. You know, we did go out and meet with staff, great staff, right? They know where their stuff is. Everything's clean. They can find it. But, you know, we're working on making sure that the valuation of those inventoryable assets, some of them are, the pumps are fairly costly. So those four items you'll see in our letter to you, the board. And the second thing that you'll see is the sensitive disclosures. And so we call out the other post-employment benefits in note 11 and the pension plan disclosure in note 10. And we were kind of in note 10 just now. There's a lot of good information in there. This is a very astute group. I mean, I'm amazed that you guys are asking the questions that you're asking me. To be perfectly honest, most boards are not hanging with me on this stuff. They're not going into the notes and understanding. It's there, though. There's a sensitivity analysis in note 10 and 11. You can see, now I should swing back out to the financial statements. Let's go to 31 again, or thereabouts. Let's go to 33. Do you see that? I talked about that $11 million that's in the pension, that's in non-current. It's somewhere in that $55 million, okay? If you don't get 7.5 and you only get 6.5, you can see the sensitivity analysis that you lose essentially $6 million. You have to provide $6 million out of that $7 million that we were talking about. So it could be a concern. But over 30 years, from what I understand, talking with some of these actuaries, it's a non-cash item. And on a non, you know, it's a real liability. But as people die off and the new PEPRA and, you know, comes into play and the classic goes away, things are going to adjust a little bit. Now, how much? I bet you your management knows.
Well, that's why the game is in the actuary numbers. That's why that's so critically, that's right, critically important.
That is. So all I'm doing is I'm pointing it out and saying, I don't do this. You know, GASB 68, the first year, all the auditors were all in. Second year, they realized, oh, wait a minute. You know, CalPERS is throwing different numbers at us. They're changing the way they're doing stuff. This is not our area. And so in year two and in year three, we started getting involved with valuation experts. And then we got OPEB. So you're right. 10 years ago, we didn't have any of this, and your financial statements weighed a lot less because now it's half valuation stuff and we're just disclosing.
So this, the pension and OPEB discussion, I think it would probably be more appropriate for next month when we're talking about, you know, what's our funding plan, what's the pension liabilities look like. And then we can get some good directions from the board, like what Commissioner Kelly said, having an annual report that's updated each year, maybe in June before the end of the year, and information for you guys to take a look at.
Yeah. So we can roll right off of that. Yes?
Before we leave the other topics, were you planning on addressing inventory?
It's a comment in the letter to you.
That we haven't received.
Yes.
So could you tell me what it says?
I can read it. Yeah.
We'll email the letter to the board tomorrow.
Is there a problem? I would be stunned if
this is not a management letter. Okay. This is a letter that points out areas that the auditor thinks are significant so far as estimates and sensitivities, and that if you were reading the financial statements and you weren't an expert on this and you sat on the board, here's where I'm going to lead you. I'd say you probably need to understand note 10, note 11, understand inventory is not a big number, but what we said about it was...
If you look at page 12, the statement of deposition, you look at the current assets, there is an item inventory, parts and fuel, $1.8 million. A couple years ago and prior, we didn't show the value of all the inventory that we had on site as an asset. Mm-hmm. But we had it as assets. Mm-hmm. So that was something that was added a couple years ago. So this $1.8 million is the actual procurement cost for all of those parts, materials, and supplies that's tracked in our asset management program. So our staff, we take something out of inventory and use it. It goes away. We buy things. They get checked in, barcoded. And that... All those numbers in aggregate equal $1.8 million at the end of the last fiscal year.
Sounds absolutely right. Why are you putting it on your list of something that we need to worry about?
I'll read it for you. Management estimate of the value of inventory on hand is based on the cost of the inventory. We evaluated key factors and assumptions used to develop the inventory evaluation and determined that it is reasonable in relation to the financial statements taken as a whole. I actually went out and looked, and Ken knows this, with staff. Mm-hmm. I went over to Corte Madera, looked at some very expensive pumps.
Counted them.
A couple of them, because of the way that I think that the program worked.
I think it was old or something like that.
Yeah, it needs a little bit of work. And so there's some estimates there, but it's materially correct. Is it perfect? No. So that's why I put it there.
Okay, but it's... Of all of the things that we're accounting for, this is the one thing that you think needs a little...
This is not a management letter. This is simply saying to you, here's some estimates that were done. I don't know. We tested high dollar values, mm-hmm. so the inventory is materially correct. Doesn't mean it's 100% correct. Ken and I have talked a little bit about it, and last year... It was more of an issue than this year. So it's getting better.
Okay. All right.
I don't know if that answered the question, if you think I'm kind of going around it, but these are estimates.
Okay.
So the intent of putting that in your guys' letter, just to explain to the board that we're estimating the value of this and we're giving it to you and you're relying on our estimate because you can't confirm it.
Right. Well, the system that you have down there, it shows what it was purchased at.
Oh, yeah.
And some of the older items don't necessarily have a dollar with it. And so we're working on
it's
that.
It's probably because they're really old and we weren't tracking that information. Or it came from an older system and transferred over and it didn't have cost information in the old system. So it sounds like there's some inventory items in there that we need to identify and assign a dollar amount to it. So it's probably the inventory number is too low.
We had an interesting problem in that we have items in the inventory that have been fully depreciated.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you about that. That's our capital assets, too.
But mm-hmm. clearly they're not depreciated to zero. Well, depreciated to zero.
You shouldn't be depreciated.
Like a pump is depreciated to zero, but it's operating, it has a value, and so it has a replacement value.
Yeah.
And so we had to go back and look at these things.
So do we depreciate to zero here? Because we should be...
No, we're not depreciating inventory.
We don't depreciate inventory.
Well, how about the capital assets? You definitely depreciate the capital assets.
Yeah, that's shown on there. Okay. Depreciation for assets.
It's not inventory. You don't depreciate
it. Yeah, and that's what I was saying. Inventory is not the wrong word.
Okay.
Because inventory isn't... But the capital assets, are we ever depreciating them to zero? Because you
shouldn't
really. Sure.
I mean, you know, what your policy is, whatever the policy is, and you can... You're not bound by IRS standards. If you say it's 100 years that you're going to depreciate it over, it's 100 years. You know, it's just based on whatever policy you
have determined. Over there is, if you have, for example, you have a 24-inch pipe in the ground,
right,
and it would normally be depreciated to zero, but it's still working, we have to leave it at 15% because it's functioning. It's there.
You're talking residual value?
Yeah.
So what's your policy? I mean, I don't remember that one, but I would say it would probably go to zero. You know,
you can take a look at page 13. Under operating expenses, there's depreciation. So we have $4.1 million in depreciation of capital assets this year. And that's a straight line depreciation going through the big fixed asset inventory saying, here's what all these things cost, here is their service life, here's what year they are in their life, and here's the depreciation this year in total. And there's some assets that we have. For example, we have this diesel emergency engine that's been in service since 1985. Well, that's fully depreciated, but it only has maybe 1,000 run hours on it. And it's well maintained, it'll probably last another 20 years. But accounting-wise, it doesn't have any value.
Yeah.
But it has real value to us.
Yeah.
And we, you know.
So that's a different way of doing it, because as we always, Zach, I tell you, accounting, it's an art, not a science.
Right, right. Yeah, and you could change the straight line. Yeah. If you realize, oh, this is going to be gone in 10 years, that's what we set it as, and you realize it's going to go 20, then you can slow down the depreciation on it. But, you know, that's a policy matter.
It's a lot of work,
too. It's a lot. Yeah, you don't want to mess with it too much. It's kind of...
Let's just stop appreciating from now on. Is that policy board? No more appreciation, see what I'm saying?
So,
magic world.
You guys are hanging in there. I think I'm over my probably 10 minutes here, but this is helpful. This is another one for your revenues, expenses, and changes in net position. Comes down to the same number, that 1.425 change for the year, right? So you can see your revenue. If you actually look in your MD&A, you'll see percentages.
Yeah.
And it's actually a little more helpful.
Yeah.
So you can see, I think it was,
what page was that?
Probably a little better if we go there.
I think that was 30.
Yeah, like page 5. Actually,
oh, that's
page
right.
7.
On page 5.
Page 7. Page 7.
No. Here.
One's the assets and one's the P&L.
Yeah.
So your total revenues, they're up like 6% for the year. The biggest portion of that being service charges are up 3.5%.
That's part of the revenue plan.
Right. And then you aren't even up 1% on your expenses, which is pretty good, but your net position, 3.4%, that bottom line, that 1.425. So government, and I think this is neat, government does not need to spend everything or save everything. You know, it's the plan that you have as a board, how you handle it, you know, and where you want to be. And you have some moving pieces now we've talked about, right? Inventory, to a lesser extent, your pension, maybe even if you are concerned about deferred maintenance. Like you said, we didn't have it. It was a pay-as-you-go a couple years ago, but everybody knew that someday pension was going to become an issue. And the accounting gods finally did something. Well, they haven't done anything about deferred maintenance. If you go over to the city of Orinda, you'll see their roads are terrible, yet it's a very solid city on the finances. They really need their... you know, public to float a bond. Will it ever happen? I don't know. That's up to them. But, you know, I'm just kind of giving you a little perspective on how I feel about it. So so far as my job to issue and give you my opinion on your financial statements, it's within an immaterial amount, you know, you're right there. You know, they're materially correct. It doesn't mean there's something that we won't be looking at maybe closer next year when we talk and assess our risk here on where are the areas that we think we need to spend time on. And that's what helps us being, it'll be our third year next year as the auditors. So we've kind of got our feet on the ground now. Now we can dig in a little. But, anyway, that's a great year, great staff, great board, you guys. You know, nobody glazed over. This is a long accounting conversation. So this doesn't happen very often to me. We'll make sure we get you that letter that is critical to your understanding of what we're trying to tell you.
John, did you come from Walnut Creek tonight?
I actually did, but I came early.
Well, thank you.
You're
it's
welcome.
A long way.
Well, I've got a relative over here in Kentfield, at one of the facilities, and so I came over a little early, avoided traffic, and it's been good. And it's actually nothing. I mean, it's really not that far when you get on that, avoid traffic, that's for sure. So,
Mr. Vice Chair, if there's no further discussion, I would move that we accept fiscal 2019's audited financial statements.
Second.
Yeah. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Thanks. Thank you all.
Thanks, Sean.
Okay. I'll make sure we get that in the, over to you if we somehow didn't do that. And yeah. Apologize to the board for not having
that. As soon as we receive that letter, we'll send it to you all.
Sounds
all
right. San Quentin.
Okay. So item number six, San Quentin Pump Station. Motor Control Center and Control Panels Upgrade Project, CMSA contract number 20-01. The recommendation is that we award the construction contract for the San Quentin Pump Station Motor Control Center and Control Panel Upgrade Project to Fort Bragg Electric and authorize the general manager to execute the contract agreement, Jason.
I agree with that recommendation.
Well, as we discussed, Jason, it was nice to see somebody come in under budget, or under estimate, pardon me.
That was
so with Fort Bragg at $297,997, boy, they really, they needed to get that under three. That's what they were trying to do, $300,000. That was their goal. And, of course, the guys in Santa Rosa didn't feel like they had to get theirs under $350, you know.
So. Just for everybody else, Fort Bragg Electric did a very big job for us over at the Kenfield Pump Station. And really did a lovely job.
Great.
All right. Sounds good.
Love it.
And they've done a couple projects for CMC in the past. And they did fine work here.
When the chair's ready, I'm prepared to move them up.
If nobody has any further discussion on that, the motion will be lovely.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None.
I'd just like to say this is my first meeting. I liked how you tied the strategic plan.
Yeah.
What then?
Oh, yeah.
Strategic plan.
We started doing that last year, yeah.
That's a nice touch.
Thank you.
And our board has considered that for us also. Yeah. Okay. Item number seven, agency space evaluations. Receive the ad hoc special evaluation committee's findings and provide direction to the committee and or staff as appropriate.
Okay, so last May, the board formed an ad hoc space evaluation committee comprised of Chair DiGiovanni and Commissioner Kelly, and I was staff to the committee. And really, the assignment of the committee was for me to take the committee around to all the unused areas around the tree plant property and also on our parcel that we own on the south side of Anderson Drive and just discuss, could these be used for something? Could the property on Anderson Drive be sold, you know, at some point and developed? And to ultimately come back to the board and present some findings and some recommendations for each of these particular areas around both parcels. So what we have attached to the staff report are four drawings, I get to refer you to these, that shows these areas. So the first drawing is just the property. So we own two parcels, the one that the treatment facility and the structures and buildings and effluent pond are on, which is about 28 acres. And by the way, there was an error in the staff report that said 25 acres, it's supposed to be 28. And then we have 26 acres, which is on the hillside. So we walked up, we drove up to the property, and it's a very complex way to get there. You have to go down Anderson, turn on Jacoby, then you go on to Garbino's property, then there's a series of roads that we take lefts and rights on, then you get to CMSA's access road. And really kind of the thought at the time was, this is heavily wooded, it's very steep, hard to get here, and it'd take a lot of earth moving to have, you know, level areas where you could build on. Subsequent to that, you know, our engineering staff did quite a bit of research on historic documents associated with the approval of the CMSA treatment plant site by the State Water Board and the US EPA, and what we discovered was that hillside property was intentionally purchased
by EPA.
Purchased by CMSA and reimbursed by, you know, the EPA grants as an odor buffer zone. Mm-hmm. And also, CSA and Rafael had to approve this site for the CMSA. And there were two pieces to their approval. One was that all the member agencies would pay for the Anderson Drive extension from the end of Anderson Drive, it used to be at our driveway here, up to Sir Francis Drake. And we ultimately then granted them the right-of-way for Anderson Drive, and that we have an owner easement issued by the city for the hillside. So there's a couple things that we learned. So based on that, the recommendation of the committee is not to develop the hillside or look for someone to buy it. Just keep it, maintain it, and treat it as a buffer zone, as was originally intended as part of the State Water Board requirement for the property.
Sounds like we don't have much choice in that.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's, but we consider many things. But
that gets to my suggestion, which I was speaking to Jason about earlier today, which is it may be wise for us to look into it, because if you look at this, it's foresty until our line ends, and then it's not. We may want to look at managing our wooded area to minimize the risk of our area being a conflagration area for a fire.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That must be.
Yeah.
We must be implementing all wildfire prevention measures that are prudently adopted by the fire marshal.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Jason, I said, would it be Jason Weber you talked to, or the Santa Rafael fire chief?
We would talk with the Santa Rafael fire chief. Okay. I guess Bob Sinek right now, former board chair of CMSA for many years.
Really?
Yeah. He was Larkspur's appointee from, I forget when, from like when Gene Mariani transitioned off the board. I guess it was like 2004 through 2010. Bob Sinek was on the CMSA board.
Ideally suited.
Well, what I'll do is, if that's direction from the board, we'll note that in the minutes, and I'll contact acting fire chief Sinek in the near future and just kind of maybe walk on the land out here and just get some advice from him, and then we can come back to the board and tell you kind of what we need to do. Because right now what we do is from Anderson Drive along the hillside up through right. two drainage ditches, we annually have all that cleared. So we'll receive bids from like Conservation Corps or various other contractors, and they pull out the scotch broom, you know, weed whack all the bushes down, fire prevention
area there.
Yeah, just only 20, 30 feet max, 20 feet.
You don't use the goats?
No.
You don't have to use goats because we're on fences. Oh, it's also probably too hilly for the goats.
They bring in the fences. Right. You should really look into the goats.
Yeah, the
goats. People love them.
Yeah, I do. I love them too. Because we've seen them along Anderson Drive. I'm sorry, is it Anderson or the other one?
No, they're behind our VSD. What's his name? The debris box guy.
No. They, you know what it is? It's along 580. When I'm taking from Santa Rafael to my office down near Home Depot, that little piece of highway, they're right on the side there, too.
Homeless encampments behind our VSD on the other side of Kerner.
Okay.
And they bring in the goats to clear that out so you can see what's
going on. That'll get us sloppy. It won't get the big wood out. So I think
along the edge of China Camp. They're very economical and extremely efficient.
And the kids love them.
Adorable.
And they're adorable. People love them.
I do.
You know where they had
Jason? They want me to be a clearing,
next to the new rail.
They come with their own attendants. They come with their own fences.
Yeah.
The package deal.
You should see the carrier form.
Too.
It's a double-decker. it's a horse carrier.
Yeah.
It's been divided into two pieces, and they put them all on the bottom, close the door, and put her in ramp, and bring them in the top.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, people...
with dogs.
Anyway, okay, so there fire prevention.
Fire prevention, goats.
Okay, so we'll note that direction there. Well, just a story about the goats.
Okay.
So I do a lot of mountain biking. I was mountain biking with some friends out in West Marin, kind of west of Fairfax, up in the hills. And we were coming down this one particular trail, a real rugged trail, but it was legal. And there was a little fence around this big piece of land, and there was all these goats eating all the foliage in there.
Yeah.
We stopped and looked at the goats and kind of...
See?
Then went down the trail. Yeah, we'll look into goats next time. We would include that hillside.
Yeah,
I'll tell our maintenance supervisor that there's he can look find the company, see how much they cost using the goats versus the crews. We'll definitely reach out to Bob Sinek about touring this hillside and give us some recommendations on clearing out any of the undergrowth.
I can give you the contact details for the goat people.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
I really can.
Okay, so we want to.
We have the other areas that really should be talking about.
Okay, so then drawing two shows the areas around the admin building and the parking lot around maintenance, and that parking lot really is dedicated for just maneuvering vehicles and parking. So we do have three sizable landscaped areas that are maintained by staff that look really nice, and the committee said, well, let's definitely keep maintaining those, but if we ever need to expand the admin building for, you know, expansion of laboratory, if we need more staff, you know, larger, you know, male-female locker rooms or other purposes, that we could either go up or we could extend out into these landscaped areas. That's kind of the finding there and the recommendation. Going on to drawing three, that shows the corporation yard. That's about 30,000 square feet. And as you know, we just entered into a five-year license agreement with Marin Airport for them to park Marin Transit buses on this kind of northern shaded area, which is about 18,000 square feet. And that can be extended, you know, at the end of the five-year term if agreeable to the board and Marin Airport. And the only, we don't really have a use for most corporation yards of vehicles driving through it. Occasionally we'll have some vehicles parked on the perimeter on the south side. But as I know in the staff report, it could be, you know, in several years at the end of the Nutrien second watershed permits, completion of their science plan, that they identify that different sub-embayments or areas within San Francisco Bay are impacted by nutrients, phosphorus or nitrogen-type compounds. So if the central San Francisco Bay is impacted by nutrients, that's where we discharge, then it could be we might have some effluent limits for nutrients. And the current treatment processes don't remove nutrients. So if that's the case, as you guys may remember from our master planning work, that we identified this area as a site for nutrient removal facilities. There'd be some modifications to existing treatment processes, and then we'd have, for example, a biological BNR nutrient reactor, is that what it is, nutrient reactor? That would be in the corporation yard, some additional processes, and then a pumping facility to pump that water back to the chlorine content tanks for disinfection. We'll know more about that in the end of 2022, early 2023, probably, when the Regional Water Board is evaluating the science plan and starting to develop, with BACWA, the next, well, the third five-year nutrient permit. So the recommendation from the committee is continue with leasing to the Marin Airporter and just reserve that corporation yard for the potential location for treatment facilities for nutrient removal. And we'll know more about that in the future.
Can you guess on that if we had to do that?
Pardon me?
Cost-wise? Because I'm seeing that coming down the road sooner or later.
Oh, yeah. Well, in the master plan, that kind of high-level conceptual cost estimate, I think it was $36
million. That was a good price.
$2018 dollars, yeah.
Union Sand, just south of Oakland, is starting their first phase of theirs, and the first phase is $300 million.
No! Huh. Yeah.
San Mateo's is $1 billion.
SAC Regional, right?
Yeah.
$1.6
billion? $1.6.
Yeah. Yeah. You saw we had $43 million in that position. So yeah. Now we can't tap into that for future. We only have $7 million we can use.
So that price is a good price.
Oh, yeah, that's... And that would be, you know, I won't get into details, yeah. But yes, for a certain size facility. Then the last drawing just shows another piece of kind of larger unused land. That's next to the chlorine contact tanks. Right now, when we have, you know, decent size construction projects where a contractor needs staging or they need, you know, a portable office, we locate them in that area. And also, if you remember, that in the 2017 recycled water feasibility study, the recommended project was like 184 acre foot, or about 0.2 MGD, tertiary recycled water facility that would be located here, and then we'd pump the water over to San Quentin for a few uses. But that, the cost of that project was pretty prohibitive, you know, for the water district. It's like $3,000 to $3,200 a couple years ago per acre foot of water, which is quite a bit more than their contract with some kind of water agency. So it's in their 2040 master plan, but there has been a really serious discussion about moving that forward. But if they wanted to, and the CMSA board wanted to, this could be the location for those facilities. So right now the recommendation is just to continue using this as a contractor staging area when needed. And that's really the space evaluation committee report. Commissioner Kelly, anything else to add?
No, I would only move to receive the report.
Okay.
Thank you.
In favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? None. Numero ocho.
Okay.
The senior engineer job description and compensation rate, and provide direction to the general manager as appropriate.
Okay, thank you. So this is, we've talked about this at least once in the past, and that was creating a higher level engineering classification just to expand the engineering series at the agency. So right now we have the assistant engineer and the associate, so this would add, if approved, a senior engineer position. We would be looking to, you know, add an actual another engineering, you know, FTE to the agency. It'd just be in the future if we had a vacancy, we'd have a position there at a higher level to recruit for. But more importantly, it provides just a little more room for growth for existing staff. So you see all the bullet points on the first page. Those are the primary differences between some of the essential job functions in the senior position as compared to the associate. For example, the associate, there's a lot of terms that say assist with managing a project, you know, participate in, you know, the selection of a consultant, while the senior would be administering the consultant selection process, managing this particular capital project. So just higher level job functions and more responsibility. In terms of the proposed compensation range, that was constructed just surveying our 13 comparable organizations that we've negotiated with the union employee groups and that we use for all of our different compensation market surveys, like the one from earlier this year. And it's just comparing it to the average of the comparable organizations. And there were 9 of our 13 organizations that had senior engineer positions. So yeah, as Vice Chair Borstein said, our recommendation is to approve the senior job description. And we just have filled the associate engineer position that was caused by Amy Huang's separation.
That's in the report.
Yeah, in the world report.
Well, I would move that we approve this job description if there's no further discussion.
I'll second.
Yep. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? None? Number 9, informational items.
Just information for the board, these few documents, nothing to we need to present. I can answer questions.
Number 10, North Bay Watershed. Put your feet up. This is going to be a while. There was a little fire last month, and the North Bay Watershed Association meeting was canceled for the month. So.
We'll look forward to an exciting part of the next one.
Number 11, oral reports by commissioners and or the general manager.
I have nothing.
Okay, just a few items here. So here's the handout. I just want to touch on the highlighted items. So I talked about the associate engineer recruitment. Then we have hired 3 institutional utility laborers. So two will be starting next Monday, and the third will be starting the third Monday. Remember, these 3 positions are being funded through our contract with Department of Corrections because their primary job function is going to be doing some maintenance work out at the San Quentin Pump Station.
And were you able to hire locally?
You know, we only received 1 application from the Community Alliance, and that was, you know, after 5 or 6 outreaches to them. You know, just sending them the resume, the announcement, following up on it, then at the end of the recruitment period. Because we only advertised in the IJ and with them, mm-hmm. and we didn't receive anything. So we contacted them again and said, hey, did you do some more outreach? Because we're at the end of the period. So we extended it a couple weeks, and there was a new fellow there that was coordinating internally with, you know, people that were looking for jobs. And there was 1 fellow that turned an application. Mm-hmm. Then he ended up not following through because he got a construction job. Mm-hmm. But the people we hired are local. Yeah. So 1 is from Corte Madera. Okay. 1 is from, I think, Richmond, you know, across the bridge. That's, and the other one is American Canyon. The American Canyon is the brother of Tony Rubio, who's the manager of Tiburon Sanitary District. Yeah. So that was interesting. Yeah, so when they're not working at the pump station, they'll be doing various, you know, utility work here, you know, custodial, you know, landscaping, you know, helping out operators and mechanics with certain tasks. And then I mentioned that Dave Ernst, one of our lead operators, great person, left to be the wastewater superintendent of Windsor Street mm-hmm. plant. We went to the OIT hiring list that was good for a year, and we hired Bobby Emter, who started on the 21st of October. And then a couple things that are agency business. So Heidi Lang, our finance analyst, she attended this Marin County Finance Group meeting. And there she learned that Sausalito, Tiburon, Mill Valley, and Corte Madera use the same financial software that we're buying. Yeah. Yeah. And all their finance directors and staff just had really great things to say about it, such as easy to use, great customer service, and other positive comments. So she was pretty excited and came back and told Ken and I about that. And then lastly, we're moving forward, it seems, on the Larkspur withdrawal process. That we prepared a process that went to the managers and to Larkspur, and they thought it looked good. And San Rafael Sand Board has looked at it and thought it looked good, and they appointed Mary Beth to our ad hoc committee. Mm-hmm. I did talk with Dan Schwartz at Larkspur, and they appointed Dan Hilmer to the committee, and Dan said he will come at 6:30 to that committee meeting. Don't know if he'll stay for the regular meeting after that, but. And then now we're just waiting for Ross Valley to hopefully appoint one of you guys at an upcoming meeting. And then I talked with Todd Cusimano over at Corte Madera, and I gave him what the process is, and I suggested that he appoint Eli to the committee. So it would be an independent committee of the member agencies meeting here before our meeting for about half an hour, but it would be just a closed-door meeting because it's not a quorum of the CMSA board. It's just independents who just happen to be commissioners. And then we'll talk about, you know, the process. And we did prepare a draft withdrawal agreements between the member agencies and the new public works director at Corte Madera, who's the SD2 manager, mm-hmm. RJ, he did provide that to their attorney, mm-hmm. and she had some suggestions, which were okay. But they're essentially putting some provisions in the recitals just stating that Ross Valley annexed Larkspur's area, that they have all the financial responsibilities, things that they've already talked with Ross Valley about, so we include that language, and then have a signature block for Larkspur, which is more just like acknowledgement that they're acknowledging that everybody's agreeing to them withdrawing. So we'll probably make those revisions, run it by the managers group, and then that will be brought to the committee, or form that will be brought to the committee to look at and provide comments on. Then once we finalize that agreement, then hopefully it would go back to each of the member agencies. So it's moving a little, so that's good news.
Can I ask you to return to an item that you did not highlight?
Sure.
Can you report the, forget what PSPS, the power outages.
Yes.
And I'd like to report to you that, at least in San Rafael, charging stations and providing charging services were very much in demand. It occurs to me that CMSA is the only location, only power generating facility in the county that would be up and running under pretty much any circumstance for some time. So start thinking about how we might be in a position to provide what was a public service that was very, very much in demand.
I had to sit in Target. I'm not kidding. And Target must have made some sort of a deal with San Rafael when they got that property, because they were so nice, I figured it had to be, they had to be a community center. No, it had to be like a community center in emergency. That might even be written into it. They have a generator. No, everybody was in the lobby. I found a hallway that was empty. So I went in, I plugged in. I was all alone for like an hour, and then somebody said, I'm sorry, I can't be in the hallway. Go down to computers. And they told me to plug in the computers. So that was very helpful.
San Rafael City Hall and B Street was wall-to-wall. We had every extension cord that the fire chief would allow us to employ and every power strip. So start thinking about how we might be a part, CMSA might be part of the solution to a broader need for charging.
It's an interesting thing I brought up with Jason. I said, you know, so clearly we were operating on biofuels during that time. We're not. When PG&E cuts off the power, we don't have the appropriate infrastructure to be running off biofuels during that time. We were running off our diesel generator.
Off the diesel generator, is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
So we can't run the.
Well, what happens is when the PG&E power goes out, various relays, you know, trip, mm-hmm. and the breaker opens, and when that happens, or while that's happening, the cogen system shuts down, mm-hmm. and the diesel emergency generator, you know, starts up. So what we talked about internally was developing a strategy. And we can do this. We have to develop the procedures and train people to where, when that happens, to start the cogen system up at some kind of a baseload operation, like 400, 450. And then we would then start the diesel generator to track with demand, internal demand, mm-hmm. during that time period.
Load follow.
Because the cogen has to have a minimum output, like, you know, 60% of total, something like that, mm-hmm. to operate. The diesel doesn't, but the diesel responds much quicker than the biogas-fueled cogen engine to change the demand, so we could run both. So that's something that we're looking at doing in the future. We just haven't had to do that in the past because prior power outages were very short-term. Mm-hmm. But now we're looking at the possibility of longer-term ones. We don't want to flare the biogas. And it is just what was bad that day is that that was Monday, and there was the power outage, and we had this long-term...
Well, we flare. It provides some light to people going up the house to drive.
Stop.
That's, yeah.
It also took a fire.
Yeah, good point.
We had several several members from different divisions from the Bay Area Quality Management District coming by for a tour to talk about our organic waste program, power generation that day. Yeah. So they were all here. I was giving a tour. They said, "Oh, you're flaring." And I said, "Oh, yeah, we're allowed to flare during emergencies. You know, the power out is defined as an emergency. So, and cogen's offline, so we're allowed to flare." They're all, "Okay." That was the last we asked. So then I went back to the plant manager and said, "Yeah, we need to develop a new, you know, operational strategy for this." You know. He agreed, which was good.
Yeah.
And get some power strips in. I'm telling you, we were wall to wall in City Hall and in B Street.
Yeah, I'll bring this to the board in December, and we can talk about it a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm glad you brought that.
Sure. Yep. Seeing nothing else, next meeting adjourned, and we'll see everybody on December the 10th.
Great.
PM.
Thanks, everybody.
I'll tell you, I never thought I'd be close to the North Korean.
Are we going to be at 6:30 p.m.?